This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 156.
And when we're interviewing folks around AI fluency, we're more interested, to be perfectly honest, in why folks think about it the way they do than whatever they happen to be building or producing in the here and now. And the reason is because however cold today's use cases are, things are moving and improving so quickly that that's not really the game. The game is, are the underlying mindsets and decision-making qualities, the reasoning and the critical thinking, the growth mindset, the perseverance of the builders themselves. And I think that's true for so many organizations. If you like zoom out of like individuals to entire teams, like that's the game. That's how we think about it at Zapier. It's like, however good we may or may not be at something today, it's not nearly as important as our rate of learning. And we're looking for that when it comes to candidates for AI fluency.
How can HR teams embrace AI to improve both productivity and quality? Why is building AI fluency critical for your career and your organization? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. Since launching the Future of HR podcast in late 2022, I've been fortunate to have meaningful conversations with over 150 HR thought leaders and world-class CHROs from around the globe. These conversations have given me a unique perspective on where HR is today and where we're heading in the future. And because of this vantage point, over the past year, I have had the privilege and opportunity to be a keynote speaker at 16 internal HR conferences for Fortune 500 companies like Kohler, AbbVie, Corning, Nike, LabCorp, and more. And what am I talking about? More often than not, I'm asked to give my signature talk, Future-Proofing HR, Creating Value by Unlocking the Capabilities of Tomorrow, which is designed to help your HR team shift their mindset from being a strategic business partner to a value creator. And these aren't just presentations, they're interactive sessions that equip your HR leaders with practical frameworks to challenge conventional thinking and move beyond the traditional HR playbook. If you're planning your next HR conference, career week, or leadership gathering and want to provide your team with insights that drive immediate impact, I'd love to connect and explore how I might help make your event a big success. Feel free to reach out to me at jp@futureofhr.com to start the conversation. With that, my guest this week is Brandon Samet. Brandon is the Chief People Officer at Zapier, which is one of the few organizations that is enabling companies to put AI to work and solve real business problems. Zaps, as they are called, connect AI and other applications directly to your workflows, allowing you to automate work or even build AI agents. And while Zapier's products are innovative, so is how they operate. They're a remote-first company that believes in talent-first, location-second, with 750 employees in 42 countries. They also believe in radical transparency and have implemented what they call talent density as the foundation for their talent strategy and much more. Zapier is one of the few companies that has truly put AI at its core and across every function, not just the people team, and they've been on this journey since 2023. This was an incredible conversation with Brandon, and I learned a ton, and I know you will too, as we discussed the AI fluency framework Zapier is using to evaluate both job candidates and team members, why every role on Brandon's people team and across Zapier is being rebuilt with AI at the core, and what this means for raising the bar on talent and HR, how AI and automation are enabling Zapier's people team to focus on more meaningful work, which is driving engagement and enhancing their careers, why Zapier's focus on talent density led them to raise compensation from the 50th to the 90th percentile, and why Brandon believes AI initiatives should go beyond saving money and time and instead focus on improving the quality of outputs. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello, And now let's jump into my conversation with Brandon. Brandon, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, JP. Good to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. I've been looking forward to this conversation because not only is Zapier, I'm actually a client of Zapier, which I know there's no, I'm not getting paid to have you on the podcast, but for my business, my Next Gen HR Accelerator, if someone buys that course, there's a Zapier or a Zap, as you guys call it, that actually feeds it into my email platform and notifies me that someone's bought the course. I've seen the power of what you guys do. And so I'm excited to get into the conversation and just talk through that. I think it's going to blow a lot of people's minds on where we're going. But what I want to talk to you about first is just a little more of your career history. You've been a chief people officer for now over 8 years across two companies, but it was actually a single CEO call that really changed your career path. Tell us more about that story and that moment.
I'll never forget it for a lot of reasons. The first is that it changed my life and it changed my career, but the circumstances were also pretty memorable. So I was on parental leave at the time when I got this phone call. It was about a week from coming back to work after we had our first kiddo, who's almost 9 years old already. And I got a call from my CEO, Travis. Travis had an invitation. His first question was, "Hey, are you still coming back from leave in about a week?" I said, "Yep, still coming back as planned." He said, "Great, because you're probably wondering what's been going on at the company and what you're going to come back to do." He said, "I have two opportunities for you." At the time, right before I went on leave, I was doing sales and BD at this company, a company called LiveRamp. It's a public company today. Great company, amazing team. And Travis said, "You can come back and do a role on the BD team, just doing an up-leveled version of what you were doing before." I said, "Okay, well, that's pretty cool." And he said, "Or," and he said, "this one's a little bit of a curveball." He said, "You could come back and help build out our people team." And I was like, "People team?" I was like, "Well, I didn't even know we had one." I was like, "You mean the HR team?" He's like, "Yes." He's like, "Well, we don't want to think about it or operate it like a traditional HR team." So I asked him to tell me a little bit more, and I asked him to tell me a little bit more about why he was asking me to do it. It was so interesting. I'm hearing all of this. I had finished grad school about a year earlier. I did an MBA, I did a master's in education. I was fascinated by the role that technology was playing in the future of work. You would think on the face of it, this would be an amazing opportunity to lead the people team at an organization I already worked at and already really cared about. But on that phone call, and I actually had my like baby son like strapped to me. I'm like the carrier, you know, walking around pacing with him around our house as we're having this phone call. And I tell Travis, I tell my CEO, I said, "I think I'll pass on the people role. I'll come back into the BD team." He said, "I totally get it. I'd love to hear why. Why don't we talk about it tomorrow?" That night over dinner, I was sharing with my wife that conversation, and she's looking at me in a very particular way. And I know this look, and I'm like, "Well, you know, what are you thinking?" And she's like, "Gosh," she's like, "I don't think that's your best choice. You love building systems to like connect people's potential to opportunity. I'd spent the whole first half of my career in education, like for exactly that reason." And then she looked at me with like a career-changing rhetorical question. And she said, "The thing is, Brandon, if you call Travis back tomorrow and you take the people leadership role, you will be at the leadership table of this company that you care about next week when you go back to work." And then she looks at me and she says, "How long do you think it's going to take you to get to that table doing BD and sales?" And it was a rhetorical question because I don't think I was doing anything special as a BD person. I learned a ton. It was like really valuable experience. But, you know, she was right and Travis was right. So I called him back the next day and I said, "Hey, why don't we try this? And if you don't like how it's going, you can put me back on the BD team. And if I don't like how it's going, then I'll put myself back there."
That's an amazing story. Obviously, he saw something in you and gave you this shot. And you, I think, smartly listened to your wife to step up and take that opportunity. And you haven't looked back since. And you've been with LiveRamp for about 4 years. And then about 4 years ago, you joined Zapier. And I'm curious just kind of what drew you to the company and the mission to make automation work for everyone, including HR teams, which we'll talk about today. But how does that connect to your own philosophy?
I did meet Wade about 4.5 years ago. Wade was probably a few months into a search for Zapier's first chief people officer. And one of the things I would later learn about Wade, who is the CEO and the one of the co-founders at Zapier, is that he's a lifelong learner. This is a curious person. He's doing this search. He's doing it for the first time. The company's never had this role before. And so he's just talking with a bunch of chief people officers, some of whom I think he's like actually interested in talking about with the job, and some of whom he's just trying to get signal on how to approach the search. How do I attract the type of talent that I think we need in the moment? And so I get in touch with Wade, and I should have known better because I wanted to meet Wade. I knew of Wade for years. I certainly knew about Zapier. I'd used Zapier before, but I didn't really know anyone on the team. I hadn't met Wade. I really respected him as a leader from what I did know. We get on the phone. I'm hearing a little bit about what's going on in the organization. And he presents me with this incredible mission. There's the mission of the company, make automation work for everyone, which by itself, for me, is really inspiring, right? Because like a lot of what I've done in my career has all been around expanding access and opportunity for people. I come from a family of auto workers. I grew up just outside of Detroit. I was surrounded by brilliance. And yet when I moved out to California many years later for grad school, I just saw how bi-coastal certain parts of our talent markets are and how little opportunity is extended to brilliant people in places like where I grew up. And that's to say nothing of outside the US, all over the world. And so I'd always been really interested in that. And here I saw a company whose product and mission was all around expanding access to these really powerful software building tools. And then the company itself, on top of that, started all remote. Back 14 years ago, when being an all remote company, it wasn't considered novel or innovative. It was considered a terrible way to start a company. Wade and Mike and Brian, the three co-founders who all grew up in the Midwest, saw what I saw growing up, that human potential is very evenly distributed all over the world, and opportunity isn't. So those are my words, not necessarily Wade's words, but I did see a company, it was a 10-year-old company when he and I first met, that started all remote and stayed all remote and was able to attract just brilliance from all over the world. The team was about 450 people in about 30 countries when Wade and I first met. Today, it's about 750 in 42 countries. So those are a couple of the points of attraction when Wade and I first started talking about me coming over to Zapier.
Yeah, I think it's an amazing story. I love your point on talent all over the world. Opportunity is not evenly distributed. I think that's so, so critical. And I'm just thinking about, they had 450 employees in 30 countries. When you took that job, I'd be like, okay, do you have HR policies in every one of those countries? Because I know that's a lot of work to get that set up. Most founders would actually just avoid even doing that because of just the amount of hassle it is to get set up in every different country to find the best talent. So I just love they were so committed to finding great talent worldwide that they would do that. Because that seems, that's a lot, I think, for a smaller company like that.
It is. I mean, it is the type of thing where, like, if you see a company doing that, especially 14 years ago, you know they're not doing it because it's easy. They're doing it because they really believe in it. The point of conviction. One thing, JP, that has changed, though, over the last 14 years, there's a whole new crop of organizations whose whole purpose is to make it easier for small and medium-sized businesses to staff globally and abstract a lot of the administration, paperwork, policy, book writing, and maintaining regulatory shifts and what have you. And so now Zapier did it the hard way 14 years ago. Now, if you were starting something like Zapier and you wanted to have a global team from scratch, like, you've never had more options. And because there are more players in the market, it's putting some pricing pressure on the services, which make them even more affordable.
Yeah, no, it's great to underline that point. That was kind of my point. 14 years ago, I think that was a bigger lift for sure. But it just really speaks to how innovative the product is, the mission, the culture, what you guys are creating. I think it all kind of aligns. Now, the next thing you've done that we're going to talk about, honestly, I think it's pretty revolutionary again. So Zapier's made an AI fluency a non-negotiable for every team member. And I want to hear more about this. There's an AI fluency framework we'll talk about next. But just talk more about, when did leadership realize that this was necessary and what was the decision-making process behind it?
Knowing what I know now, I think we should have done this sooner. Here's what I mean by that. Zapier's AI transformation journey started almost 2.5 years ago, so earlier than many organizations, and not because Zapier was prescient or because we had to. Zapier's whole mission is around helping folks abstract tedium by being able to write software and automate work without having to code. And then in the spring of 2023, this is about 6 months after ChatGPT 3.5 comes out, and we're seeing, because we're using it pretty robustly within the organization at that time, that this is going to meaningfully influence how we help our customers actually deliver on that promise of helping people be unusually impactful and also making jobs more interesting by abstracting the tedium. And we wanted to get on top of it. Like a whole, we could see in the distance a massive wave of opportunity on the horizon. But the reality check was, just like any big wave, you can find a way to ride that wave to even greater success and like really make a bigger difference in the world. But that same wave, if you're not paying attention, can also crush you as an organization. And that's kind of the sensation we had as we got into spring of 2023. We declared a AI code red at that time, just really calling the whole organization into building and experimenting with AI because that's what our customers are doing. And increasingly, they're looking to Zapier, even all the way back then, over 2.5 years ago, for guidance and then a product that would be able to go with them on their journey as well. So say, well, we need to be our own best exemplar of this journey so we can be credible and useful to our customers. So that was a call to action. But it wasn't until 2 years later, so call it spring of this year, we had been doing all this skill building and use case development with AI inside the organization. And about 100 days ago, we were like, goodness, at the end of the day, like, we're not necessarily explicitly screening for AI fluency for all the people we're adding to the company. We had been doing it for very specific roles for years, but not broadly. I think it's time. I think we really understand like what enables someone to be successful in this organization, which is reinventing itself with AI at the core. So let's translate what we've learned into effectively a screen for 100% of candidates and for 100% of jobs in the organization. And that's how it works today. You apply to a job at Zapier, doesn't matter what it is, what job level or function, we'll be talking with you about the extent to which you're using AI and how you're using it and why you're using it, the way you're using it, and just learning alongside you. And we've also open sourced the rubric that we use to evaluate candidates. Again, like Zapier, when Zapier has a value called defaulted transparency, right? And so this is one way that we reflect that.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I'll make sure we have that in the show notes so people can find that, because I think people will be really interested in the AI's fluency framework. But then I guess the rubric also goes deeper. And I haven't even found that on my own research. So I need to go dive deep and get it. What I've seen today is it's by function. So I would call it a behavioral anchored rating scale if you want to get HRE about it a little bit. Unacceptable to transformative, I believe the scale is. And for each of the functions, it's like supply chain, HR, which is awesome. So it wasn't just HR. This is across the organization. You have examples of what it looks like and what you should be doing with AI. And I think if I remember the AI, well, I don't have you in front of me correctly, but Brandon, you can correct me if I'm wrong. For like HR, I feel like the second one, acceptable, was sort of using it for job descriptions, using AI to productivity boost, but not going the next level, like with a GPT or even further. I think the transformative ones were pretty much blowing my mind. But maybe talk more about kind of what that looks like in real life and how you're using it.
You have the framework, right, JP? There are four tiers in the framework, the first of which we don't hire out of, that's called unacceptable. It means what it says. And that's largely for folks that it's not really about skill as much as it is mindset. This is folks that may be ideologically opposed to AI or using AI in their work for whatever reason. You know, lots of respect for that. But I think one of the most important things that companies can do when they're hiring and attracting talent, it's great to be clear about what's great about your company, why folks might want to consider working there. But I think it's probably more important, honestly, to be clear about who the company might not be for. And that's why the first tier in this AI fluency framework is effectively just speaks to that as it relates to AI fluency. Like if you're kind of in this particular situation or frame of mind, based on what Zapier is trying to do in the world, based on what Zapier's customers are counting on from us, like this just wouldn't be a great match for you. However, we have three other tiers. And the first one after unacceptable is called capable. And these are for folks that are starting to use and experiment with AI, but they haven't necessarily been able to translate that experimentation into practical productivity gains yet. The next one, adoptive, these are folks who have some of the underlying skills, they've been experimenting, and they're starting to really be able to translate that into like measurable improvements in the quality or speed of the work that they're doing. And then transformative, where we see very few examples of this. And by the way, that's like a good framework, whatever that top thing is on the scale or the tiering, should be really stretchy. You want to be able to like see the exceptional when you encounter it. And that's what this transformative tier is all about. These are folks who aren't just producing measurable productivity gains through the thoughtful use of AI. They're reconsidering the work from their ground. Whereas you might use AI in a hiring process, you take your existing recruiting runbook and you look at places where AI can summarize information and maybe automate a couple things. Like that's pretty interesting. But transformative would be you kind of throw out the runbook that you have and you just think from first principles. We're trying to attract exceptional talent into our organization. Let's forget about how we've done it in the past. With the technology that's available now, how would we do it? And why would we do it that way? And when we're interviewing folks around AI fluency, we're more interested, to be perfectly honest, in why folks think about it the way they do than whatever they happen to be building or producing in the here and now. And the reason is because however cool today's use cases are, things are moving and improving so quickly that that's not really the game. The game is, are the underlying mindsets and decision-making qualities, the reasoning and the critical thinking, the growth mindset, the perseverance of the builders themselves. And I think that's true for so many organizations. If you like zoom out of like individuals to entire teams, like that's the game. That's how we think about it at Zapier. It's like, however good we may or may not be at something today, it's not nearly as important as our rate of learning. And we're looking for that when it comes to candidates for AI fluency.
I love that answer. And I think that it's just so important. We've talked through there, that kind of mindset piece of AI and like the experimentation and trying to really build from the ground up. It's not easy to do. I'm curious though, Brandon, as you think about hiring HR folks over the last few years, your people team, has this made you the bar been raised pretty high where you're feeling like we've got good talent, but yet maybe they're capable, but maybe they're not. Maybe they just haven't embraced the AI mindset. How has this helped you raise the bar for even the HR team? And how are you looking differently at HR leaders now than maybe you would have like 4 or 5 years ago at LiveRamp?
Well, I'll tell you a couple of things. Knowing what I know now, even about like the pre-AI Zapier, like I just wish we had used Zapier or things like it in my last company. Like that would have given us so much lift. And one of the reasons I like that question, JP, is what we're seeing is thoughtful use of automation and AI like absolutely improves productivity. It can improve employee and customer outcomes, like all the good stuff. But the thing that maybe I didn't anticipate as much up front, which is playing through at least as clearly as the productivity gains, is what it means to the people doing the work. And what I mean by that is, and again, like in retrospect, like it's kind of not surprising, but it's really cool to see, right? When you see someone who's basically redesigned their job, whether it's a recruiter or a people ops generalist or a total rewards analyst, and as a result, they're spending more and more of their days doing like higher level, more strategic and sophisticated work that has the potential for more impact, like so more goodness for the organization, but is also like really good for them in their careers. And it's more interesting than clicking buttons or all the stuff. Among Zapier's peers, it's like largely organizations that are pretty close to the frontier of what AI can do. But we spend a lot of time with customers and other organizations. And I love that because it's a reminder that like with a lot of these like big technology adoption curves, like you have some leaders who get way out front, but it takes years and years for most organizations to really pick up the new technology and actually convert it into real improvements. But the human impact of this for me is just as interesting as the business impact. And they go hand in hand. The one begets the other, begets the other. It's a virtuous loop. And so when we're thinking about our own people team at Zapier, we're looking for these win-wins. Where and how we're redesigning our work with AI, are we also doing that in a way which is providing like additional career opportunity for our people? And it is. Like you look at, gosh, I could just give you example after example of like specific folks on our team who over the last couple of years have become truly elite, truly like top 5% at the things that they do. And if I have done one thing to help with all of that, it's just to be unambiguous that this is really important and non-negotiable. Not just important, but non-negotiable. Like every role in this organization, including on my own team, is ultimately going to be rebuilt with AI at the core. And where people teams playing a big role in the company's overall AI transformation. And so part of our call to action within our people team is, well, we must be exemplars of what we expect within the broader organization, just like Zapier overall aspires to be an exemplar of what our customers are trying to do.
I love the fact that you are really focused on how this is impacting people in the positive way, because we have a lot of doom and gloom on the news and how it's going to take all of our jobs and all that good stuff. And it will change our jobs. And that's obviously what you're talking about. It's going to change everyone's job. And we should be thinking about how we redesign HR with AI at the center of that, right? But I love their point of like how it's actually making their jobs better. It's like a job enrichment because of the way they're building the tools, the autonomy, the mastery they're gaining from doing this work. And so that's super inspiring. And now I've basically taken about 20 minutes into our podcast, but now, Brandon, I need to talk to you about what are the use cases? Everyone's probably going to be screaming at me, JP, wait, what are they doing with AI and HR? So tell us a little more about some of these tools you've been building that are boosting productivity, making your team better from an HR perspective or people perspective.
Well, let's start in a couple different places in the employee continuum. So I'll give you a really basic example, and it's going to be really basic by design because we make a couple points with this use case. One is, the impact of a use case is not always correlated with how hard it is to build. And what I mean by that is there are certain things that we use for HR at Zapier, which actually are not that difficult to build or maintain these days, but they can have a lot of impact. Now, the opposite can also be true. This is like one of these like AI transformation traps. You can set out and build a super sophisticated system. It could be for ticketing or a recruiting workflow or pay analysis workflow. And if you kind of lose sight of what you're really trying to do, the needle or the metric that you're really trying to improve, you can over-engineer real fast. And when you do that, you build something that's harder to maintain, harder to troubleshoot if it breaks, and it like all software, like it inevitably does. And this is something, a muscle that like all of our teams need to develop too, is like building cool use cases is great, but you need to be able to, just like any other product, like the products that face our own customers, you have to improve them, maintain them, and debug them over time. And these are skill sets that are way outside of like the typical skills of an HR team today. And yet they're going to be increasingly important as teams, you know, more of their own stuff internally, which is, I think, is part of the opportunity that we see when we're talking with other organizations. So for use cases, a simple one, right at the beginning of the employee experience, I set this one up, I think within my first 90 days at Zapier. And the interesting thing is there's no AI in it. It's just an automatic way to welcome folks to the company on their very first day. How simple is that? It doesn't get any easier than that. It's pure automation. It works exactly the same way every time because I want it to. And because I don't know the new folks yet that are joining Zapier, I also don't need to personalize it. You know, you could look at that and be like, Brandon, that's so impersonal. You're just automatically slacking people, like a welcome to the company on their first day. You took all the humanity out of it. And I hear that, and I kind of understand where that's coming from, but I absolutely disagree. And I disagree for two reasons. One, I don't know these folks yet for the most part, so there's nothing to personalize. In fact, trying to personalize it without actually having the relationship, that's actually inauthentic to me. But there's a bigger reason why I disagree with this notion that it's super impersonal to do this. Because we have to think about our alternatives. So in this case, what is my practical alternative to sending these automated welcomes to new hires? Well, the alternative is not doing it. It's not writing it by hand every other Monday when we welcome a new batch of hires to the company. It's not doing it at all. And so when you think about that as your comparable, then you ask the question, which of these is more personal? Which of these has more impact on the employee experience? And there, it's a rhetorical question. The answer is obvious, right? So that one's really interesting. And when we're working with other organizations, we start with use cases like this. There's one we use at the other end of the employee continuum when folks are leaving the organization. This one is one that, also one that I set up with help from our people ops team. And this one waits until 60 days after folks have left the company, and it automatically filters for folks who left on good terms. Because I don't want to reach back out to someone who left for performance reasons or conduct or things like that. I want to be in relationship over time with the folks that we really want to stay in touch with. It looks for exits for folks who left on good terms. It then delays for 60 days. Because we do a lot of big farewell wagon and congratulations when folks leave the company, but then that subsides and you start to like lose a little bit of that connective tissue. So it intentionally waits 60 days. This one does not automatically send a message to the folks. It writes a message for me and it puts it in the drafts folder of my email. And the reason we do that is that here's the difference, right? Whereas a new hire, 99 times out of 100, I don't know them before they join the company. For folks that have left, like 9 times out of 10, I know them. We've done some work together. We've had some touch points. And so I do want to personalize those messages. But this workflow saves me 90% of the time. I'm not pulling HRIS reports or asking a member of my team to do it. I'm not filtering by hand who left on good terms. I'm not writing emails from scratch every single time. So again, it gets me almost all the way there while still doing the human in the loop piece, which at this point really matters. And the reason I share those two examples is, one, they're kind of neat, like on each end of the employee experience. And they also speak to just the importance of design. The difference between, here's an individual I don't have a prior relationship with, where like a pure automation, like boilerplate can still have a lot of impact. And then on the other end, where I do have a relationship, it totally changes my thinking around how that workflow should be built.
Really cool example. What else? I know you guys are doing some other really cool things around like talent acquisition. I mean, there's a whole list. So I'm going to let you cherry pick, because we could probably take the entire episode on this. And I would say you're doing a lot of education, free education to the community. So people, once they find you and go check out your LinkedIn, we'll see you as we're doing a lot of this live. So go see some of this stuff in action. But I would love to hear like one or two more kind of use cases that might pique people's interest to go find out more about Zapier.
You bet. Let me share two, and they're both developed in-house by our own team, and they're both pretty creative, and they're things that anyone can build. In fact, both of them are templatized, so if folks search for them, we can put them on the show notes. We'll actually get you like 80% of the way there. You don't have to build them from scratch like we did. One of them was built by a member of our recruiting team, and what she was solving for was a very specific kind of candidate fraud. So folks who would impersonate the candidate that they purport to be, or would have like someone sub in for themselves on like a skills interview, hoping that we wouldn't notice. And when we really looked into like, how could we spot that better in a more automated way? Like one of the things we noticed is there were a couple of things around like IP addresses and where folks were logging in from, or there were fairly consistent giveaways for certain types of candidate fraud. Casey Fiery, one of our recruiting operations leaders, built a workflow that automatically picks up on those IP addresses and a couple other sources of signal and flags for the recruiter situations where there might be something going on. And it doesn't tell you for sure that someone's impersonating someone else, but it provides a bit of a canary, a bit of a maybe watch out, pay a little bit more attention or check into XYZ. And we've had it live for about 45 days now. And I'll tell you, is pretty helpful, especially these days where you have a greater variety and volume of candidate fraud, AI versus AI. AI creates new problems and AI also helps solve some of those problems. So that's one. The second one, which I think is really cool, we actually use one on our exec team that the people team helped set up for us. This one is a AI coach for meetings, and we use it for our weekly exec meeting. And effectively what it does is it listens in on the meeting. What it's really doing is it's reading the transcript. There are no shortage of these like meeting note takers, and those are great and very helpful. Effectively takes the transcript from the exec meeting. And what it's looking for, there are very specific things that we want to be great at as an exec team. For example, we want to be really great at healthy, direct forms of conflict. And why? Because the more and more effectively we take big problems head on as an exec team, it saves the rest of the organization from having to figure that stuff out on their own. If we don't do it at the exec table or provide that clarity or that hard decision, whether we intend to or not, we're kind of leaving that up to our teams to figure that out on their own. And of course, we are accountable for doing the former. Healthy forms of conflict. We look at things like airtime, who's talking, who's not on which topics. We look at the extent to which we really drove clarity on the topic or decision we were trying to make. So it's looking for all of that. So there's a prompt that we've written to look for all of that. And then it provides an automated, effectively coaching readout immediately after the meeting in our exec Slack channel. So you can imagine getting this like follow-up, just say like, okay, thanks for inviting me into your meeting. Reminder, here are the things I was paying attention to as your coach. Here's what I saw, and here's what it made me think. And here's what I recommend you focus on moving forward. And one of the cherry on top things about that workflow is that it stores the coaching feedback and can reference it over time. So you're building effectively like a data set so that the AI coach has a working knowledge of feedback themes. Is this the first time it's had to recommend this? Or is this something like, it's like every time the exec team meets, it's the same thing, like keep going, you're not there yet. This notion of memory or like increasingly well-developed knowledge base, I think is one of the most interesting opportunities for an AI use case. Otherwise, it's all a set of integrations and a prompt. You can do a lot of powerful things with that. But when you combine that with a data set that's relevant to the use case, you entirely up-level the outcome you get.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not going to get too techy, but I'm going to be untechy and just tell you how I think this is happening, right? So people can understand. So the note taker is taking the notes, getting the transcripts. There's a zap that comes from that notes, right? From like a Fireflies or whatever you're using. That then pushes it to a ChatGPT that you built, right? Your own GPT probably, right? That's kind of then summarizes that and then zaps it to Slack with the output of the coaching feedback. And all that is actually, to your point, you do this on Zapier. I mean, it sounds quite harder than it may look for certain people, but it's getting so much easier every day. But then I love this, the knowledge base. So what happens there? So it hits the Slack channel, but is it also then going to that knowledge base or going back to another GPT? And building inside there. Is that what's happening? So it's kind of like almost a circular reasoning inside there.
Yep, that's right. The way you describe it, that's the workflow. So it's pulling a transcript. It's using a LLM step within Zapier with a prompt that we've created to basically read the transcript and translate that into the coaching feedback. As you get data. Then we use what we call a Zapier table, which is like a database. So all the prior feedback, every time it generates feedback, it's also storing it in a table. So you can imagine each time it's like a row. It also has like a loop with an LLM step where it can reference all of the prior feedback to effectively enrich the output from what it's about to put in Slack. And so the very last step is like, take the feedback from the existing meeting, reference kind of themes from prior feedback from prior meetings, stitch that all together into a coaching report. And then the very last step is the one that you mentioned, which is automatically send that to the exec Slack channel. Now, if you're looking for more details on this one, you won't find like exec meeting coach on our website. This one is actually adapted from another template that's more HR related, and it's a one-on-one meeting coach for managers. So it's the same workflow, right? Pull a transcript, put it through an LLM prompt, provide structured coaching feedback, automatically send it to an audience. Except in this case, the prompt is all around what we believe makes a manager really effective in a one-on-one. And then instead of sending it to like a team channel, it direct messages it to the manager themselves after the meeting. But like the exec coaching workflow, it also has this notion of memory where all the prior feedback is being stored in a table.
Hopefully people's minds are getting blown. But now the question goes, such an amazing use case, and I can see almost every team wanting and needing this and how much better we can become as leaders. I could talk more about this, but I really want to get to a couple more case studies. And I also have to make sure you get back to your day job, which is leading Zapier to the future. So I can go deeper on this one. I won't, Brandon. I want to just shift gears a little bit because there's a powerful case study that came out and got some great press. I'm going to do my best to summarize it. Please, if I miss something, get it wrong, let me know. But you guys started a transformation of your customer support team under Lauren Franklin. And the idea was that you were starting to grow faster than your team could scale. The customer support team was getting more requests. They really couldn't scale with all the demands were coming. They wanted to think differently about it. And so Laura pulled people together and said, let's use AI to think differently. And the results have been pretty amazing. So maybe just take us through a little bit about that and some of the really unique people decisions you made that I think really powered what you guys have got out of that and the results.
Let's talk about that. And yeah, and the best way to kick off, again, like you said, all credit to Lauren Franklin and the customer support team here at Zapier. It's a remarkable case study. Now, there's one especially provocative thing that we did and that Lauren did that really helped with the transformation. I think it's debatable. The challenge of needing to use more automation and AI to increase the productivity of the support team was partly of our own making by design. Now, here's what I mean by that. Before this transformation really began, we made a decision to raise the salaries of everyone in the company meaningfully. This is all the way back in Q1 of 2022. So this is effectively a year before our AI code rev. And we did it by design with a very, very specific theory. One, by the way, our talent strategy is all anchored on this notion of talent density. And what we mean by that is that at Zapier, in part because of the caliber of the talent we bring into the company, and in part through the way we use technology to think differently about how the work gets done, someone doing XYZ job at Zapier, recruiter, account executive, customer support person, should be unusually productive compared to what's typical. We think it's valuable, but we also want to pay to suit. So it's like if you are producing unusually high productivity, we want to reward you in kind. We decided to write the check to increase salaries before many of those productivity gains came to fruition. And we did that because we knew that would put pressure on us to deliver. And so you talk about this moment where Lauren's getting up in front of her team and showing how the economics of the customer support team are going to break doing it the way we're doing it. It wasn't because we couldn't hire customer support people fast enough. Lauren and team had a great reputation in the customer support community. They have a lot of success hiring folks. We had already written the check. We increased salaries from about the middle of the market to the 90th percentile. Meaningful increase in pay. The economics of support in many areas in Zapier, the way we had been doing it, started to break. And that was by design. Lauren was able to lay that out for her team and say, hey, the way we're working today isn't going to work 12 months from now. And we have enough proof of concept about how more automation and AI can help us do our work differently that like we're going to get there. We're going to have to redesign how we work. It's going to be uncomfortable, but wow, is it going to be rocket fuel for our careers to be able to succeed within this? And it's also what's needed. She said, hey, I think we will cross this bridge together, but we will cross this bridge. It is non-negotiable. And she gave the team effectively 12 months. So we're going to have to re-architect a lot of things. So I'm not claiming this is going to happen overnight, but 12 months from now, the performance expectations for all of us, including me, right, the team's leader, are going to go from here to here. And she and her team had enough proof of concept on the new ways of working to actually show, like, and let me give you an example or two of why I believe. What have I seen that makes me believe that we can do this, even though we don't totally know yet exactly the path we need to walk from here to there? That was the call to action. The team had 12 months to figure it out. 92, 93, 94, something in that range, percent of the team crossed that bridge together successfully. There was one unexpected thing that happened along the way. So yes, they did decrease their average ticket handle time by almost 50%, which is one of their core performance metrics. They maintained, or in some cases, increased customer satisfaction. So this is one of the interesting things. I think we need to be ambitious. And I really admire how Laura and her team are ambitious. It's easy to look at AI and be like, oh, great, we can be more efficient or we can cut costs. By the way, that's not unhelpful. But a more ambitious call to action that we can make for our teams is, yeah, let's find a way to be more efficient while increasing the quality of the output. So save time and money, amazing. Save time and money plus increase quality, like that's the real prize. Let's find a way to do that. But that isn't even everything that the team achieved. Those were two things that the team achieved. There was a third thing, and it wasn't something that I expected. Over those 12 months, the employee engagement scores, so many of us as HR leaders have some version of this, right? Lauren's team's employee engagement scores went up by 20 or 30 points on a scale of out of 100 on almost every topic that we measure. And that part is probably the thing that, like, delights me the most. And it kind of gets back to this notion that, like, as intimidating, ambiguous as some of these AI opportunities can be, and as stressful as it can be to figure out how to get from here to there, in the same way that it can make individuals' jobs more meaningful, more interesting, create more career opportunity, we have the same opportunity at the team level. So here we saw a whole team, like, take a big step forward on productivity and quality, but also on the everyday experience of working at the company.
What a great case study. And I love the fact that you guys focus on talent density, but also put your money where your mouth is. Because by paying someone at 90th percentile, you raise expectations. And inherently, there's a value exchange, right? You said, I'm giving more value, but we're going to expect more in return. Not just to make AI and get some productivity, but really to revolutionize it. And it sounds like it was just a huge success. I do want to ask you two more questions. I want to make sure you're back to your day job, like I said. But you've got, if you're advising another CPO, preparing to roll out kind of an AI company-wide training mandate, what's the first thing you guys start to do to become more AI first?
We've got to ground this in something that's, like, very authentic to our organization's mission, like what we're trying to do in the world. And also, our, like, the practical reality of where we're at as a business, like our P&L, our economics. There's no substitute for that. Because I think otherwise we get a bit of an eye roll. It's like, well, I guess everyone's calling, everyone's doing their, you know, it's like, okay, why us? Why now? And even doing it at the company level is not enough. I would call necessary, but not sufficient. Our company specific call to action around AI transformation is very important. But on top of that, the rubber really hits the road at the team or department level. So that looks like at Zapier 2.5 years ago after our AI code red, that looked like me finding my narrative with my team. What's our opportunity? Why now? Why is it so important? What is required of us? And what are the first steps we're going to take? Same thing for Lauren, who we talked about earlier on the customer support team. And so again, a company-wide foundation is really helpful, but you got to build on it and make it real for specific teams in their own context with the work that they do every day. So that would be my one recommendation, is like, there's no skipping that step. The good news is all of that story and alignment should be grounded in what the company already cares about. None of us are starting from scratch here. AI, it's a tool, right? It's not an outcome. In some cases, like, AI influences a company's mission and product strategy, of course. So you got to pay attention to that. But when it comes to the internal transformation, account executives, if you were to make up this hard line between a day before Gen AI and a day after Gen AI, well, the performance metrics are the things that the team cares about, whether you're an account exec or a recruiter. It's the same stuff in terms of measurable outcomes. And then really the question is, how might AI help us take a huge step forward, both in terms of how efficiently we're able to do that particular type of work, but also take a big step forward on quality.
Yeah, great reminder that our HR's job is to solve business problems, not deploy technology, even if it's cool technology like Zapier. Brandon, last question for you. What is one word or phrase you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
Ambition. Ambition. And I use that word because not only do I think that HR teams can do more and deliver more for their organizations, in part because of what's now possible with technology and how accessible it is. This is a big deal. Again, we're seeing it with other organizations. I've certainly been super inspired by seeing our own people team at Zapier level up these past couple of years. Everyday recruiters, people ops generalists, total rewards leaders, people business partners, like what is possible? It's just a world ahead of where we were in the very recent past. That's part of what I mean by ambition. Now, but the other side of this, I think we will be called into, the expectations will go up too. So it's great that we are now capable of more, in part because what organizations need from their people, our HR teams, is also rising pretty quickly. I've never operated in such a dynamic and ambiguous environment, but I've also never operated in one where there's so much possibility. So all in, I'll take the whole package.
Well, Brandon, congratulations on all you're doing. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. We learned a ton, and I think ambition is an amazing word for the future.
Cool. This is fun, JP. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Brandon for sharing Zapier's AI journey and for giving us a view into what it looks like to be an AI-first organization and people team. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, I think you'll enjoy my Future of HR newsletter, which is the only newsletter that is focused on helping you to elevate your career and your business impact. Go to futureofhr.com to subscribe and be sure to download my HR Leaders Blueprint, which is 18 pages of real-world advice from 100-plus HR thought leaders that's simple, actionable, and proven strategies to advance your career. We will be back next week with another amazing guest, Margaret Andrews. Margaret is a seasoned executive, academic leader, teacher, and speaker. She has created and teaches a variety of leadership courses and professional executive programs at Harvard University. And she's going to be talking with us about her new book, Manage Yourself to Lead Others, Why Great Leadership Begins with Self-Understanding. This is a great conversation and one you will not want to miss. Thanks again for being part of the Future of HR community.